Creator is really just kind of like the new term for entrepreneur. My intention wasn't necessarily to be a creator. I just kind of became one and I was like, oh, cool, this works.
Jade Powell is a social strategist and influencer who has worked with some of the biggest brands. Through a mix of primarily brand deals and freelance social media work, Jade is on track to bring in over $200,000 this year.
Social media is my art form. A painter has their paintbrush. I have LinkedIn and Instagram. And it sounds so silly, but like that is my favorite medium to create on.
What is a piece of advice that has radically shifted the way you approach your business?
That's a great question. I think...
Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. My name is Francis Zierer, and I am pleased to be joined for the very first time by a co-host.
Hello, hello. I'm Natalia Perez Gonzalez. I joined Creator Spotlight about 2 months ago in March, or 3 months ago now. I'm so excited to be here.
I am so excited to have you. And today we are speaking with Jade Powell, a creator, social strategist, and entrepreneur. As a social strategist, she's worked with brands like Apple TV, LinkedIn, and Delta Airlines. And as a creator, she's built a thriving, sustainable business, exactly the kind of thing we like to highlight on this show. And for example, she brought in, just in Q1 of this year, $27,000 in brand deals alone. So very transparent with your finances, Jade.
Yes, I am. I love to talk about money.
Okay, well, that's exactly where we're going to start. I'm so glad you're so transparent.
Let's do it.
So let's go back, not to Q1, but to 2024. So I think 2024 is when you kind of started coming into your own as a sustainable creator business. So at the end of 2024, you posted that you made $40,000 posting on LinkedIn that year. Can you break down what that means? What percentage, like what the revenue split percentage is on that $40,000?
Yeah, so it was all LinkedIn brand deals. So sponsored content that my brand partners were paying me to publish on my channel. It was across different brands. Majority of my brand partners are B2B SaaS companies, and all of that $40,000 came from them paying me to yap and create cool content for my audience about their products or services, any campaigns that they were running. So that's where that came from.
Mm-hmm. I read that your first one was a $1,000 deal with Sprout Social, right? Was that in 2024?
Yes. That was, I'm going to say in 2023, actually.
Okay. What point in the year? I'm just trying to figure out how long that this has been a revenue stream for you.
Very early in the year. I want to say maybe around January of 2023. And then from there, I didn't really have a lot of brand partners. The only reason why Sprout and I were really engaging in that way is because we were already partnering with through my Twitter and my Instagram account, because I had already established an audience on those channels. And then they were just like, let's try LinkedIn. And I was like, I guess, let's see.
How big was your LinkedIn audience but at that point?
Probably a little less than 10,000 followers at that time. And on Twitter, I had a little under 16,000 and around probably like 7,000 to 8,000 on Instagram. So definitely wasn't like my priority channel at the time.
Which has changed. We'll get into that a little bit later. Yeah. But I want to stay on the money track for a second here. So as I was alluding to earlier, at the end of Q1 this year, you made a LinkedIn post breaking down exactly how much money you'd brought in. And it did very well. When I wrote this down the other day, it had 1,344 likes, which is quite good. But I'm going to read down the breakdown. And then I'll have some follow-up questions. But so, okay, you say in Q1, I made $50,080.84. And this was $27,000 in brand partnerships, $20,000 in freelance social media work, $1,700 in speaking engagements, and $1,380.84. That's where the cents comes from in webinars and courses. So I do have some follow-up questions, but is there anything you'd like to say about the broader, like this as your package of revenue first?
I think I was shocked. I was like looking through QuickBooks, not sponsored. And I think I was like just doing what most business owners do, which is kind of looking at my revenue streams, looking at what was bringing me money. Honestly, also just making sure that all my invoices were paid out for the quarter. And once I kind of tag in QuickBooks where each of my invoices are associated with in terms of a revenue stream. And when I saw that total, I was like, oh, well done, Jade. Yeah, a little pat on the back, because I definitely was not expecting that. I think, you know, as someone who does a lot of like freelance contract work, creator work, it's not necessarily consistent. So I'm not necessarily like tallying how much money I made every month. I'm just like, okay, on to the next partnership, on to the next, you know, contract. And I think once I looked at Q1, I was like, oh, you did great. So I was very pleased with myself.
Jade, for your brand partnerships, you mentioned that you made 27K. And I'm wondering, how many deals did you have that year?
That was, that Q1 total came from about 6 different deals. The highest one was $10,000. And that was an in-person activation coupled with sponsored content. So I hosted a dinner with other LinkedIn influencers co-branded with my brand partner. And then we coupled in some sponsored content with that partnership. So all of that together came from about 6 different brand partners.
Mm, nice. How about the freelance social media work? For one, this is maybe a question we'll get a little more into later, but that you grouped it all together and you did not like separate it as like, here's what I made as a creator, here's what I made as a social strategist. Obviously, these things are quite like enmeshed and married for you, especially because you're the way you make money as a creator is as a B2B creator. So it's all kind of tied up together. But how many contracts was that, the freelance social media work?
That was 3. So I had partnered with 3 agencies at the beginning of the year.
Okay. And then the engagements, the speaking engagements, was this a new thing for you this quarter, or had you been doing it before? What were the contexts for these speaking engagements?
So I've done several speaking engagements over the past year and a half. I just think this year I had about, I think, 1 in person and 2 or 3 that were virtual. And the thing about speaking engagements, which I don't think people really know, is that you rarely get paid for them. So I think that I was able to bring in a little income from that, which was really nice, because sometimes a brand will approach you about speaking at their virtual event or their in-person event. And they're like, we'd love to have you, but we're not paying you. And then it's like your decision on how is this going to help me with visibility or help me grow my brand? And I kind of make the decision from there.
Well, this is maybe worth saying. I mean, we didn't pay you to come on this podcast. And that's correct. As a policy, we don't pay people to come on the podcast. Which in my mind, I want to interrogate this for a second. In my mind, this is different than a speaking engagement with a podcast. It's a lower lift perhaps. And like we are putting in, you didn't have to do much prep. We did our prep. Yeah. We did our research. We're going to package this. Like we are putting in a few dozen hours of work total across like me, Natalia, our editor, to make this something good. Right. So it's this exchange of like our work, for perhaps, you know, you're going to promote this, I hope, on your LinkedIn. Absolutely. That's always the hope. but I don't know. I'm curious if you have any thoughts. Like, have you been paid to go on a podcast before? Or how do you see this as different than a speaking engagement?
Podcasts have always been different. I do consider them like a form of a speaking engagement. But I usually go in with the expectation that I'm not paid, because I do think it's more of a visibility play. And while I do think speaking like in-person speaking engagements or like virtual speaking engagements that are more conferences or like webinars, I do think those are a little bit more involved because they usually require me to do labor in preparation. So I'm typically the one that's like prepping a presentation or preparing some type of speech that I have to give to a large audience. And in those cases, like I would like to be paid for my time. So I expect to be paid accordingly.
that's a good difference. Yeah. It's like, yeah, I'm just doing the labor podcast.
Exactly.
Do the labor engagement. Yeah. And do the labor. Okay. Last thing to move to finish moving through your revenue in Q1, the webinars and courses. Tell us about those.
Yeah. So I do webinars every quarter through my brand Creator Tea Talk. And this is a brand that I built to foster transparent conversations between influencer marketing professionals or just professionals that work in the creator economy, and then also creators and influencers. And that started off originally as a LinkedIn audio series that I was doing. It started off a couple of years ago. And over time, the brand has kind of just transformed into a lot of things. And one of those things has been webinars. So one day I was posting on my stories about this like brand partnerships deck that I was creating. And I was just like, because I like to show my process as a creator on my stories. And a lot of my audience, well, my community on Instagram, they kept messaging me and they were like, show me how to do this. And I was like, okay. So I was like, if I hosted a webinar, would you guys be interested? And also, would you guys pay for it? And they were like, yes. So that was the kickoff of my webinar series. And in each webinar, I teach creators how to do what I'm doing, how to grow a creator business. I get really in depth with the things that like most creators aren't necessarily comfortable talking about publicly, but like that is the ethos of the brand, to spill the tea. So I literally share screenshots of conversations that I've had with brands. I show my emails. I come with the receipts. I show my invoices. And I think they find it really helpful. So that has become a revenue stream because it is a paid webinar series. And then through my partnership with Teachable, what I now do is take my webinar content and repurpose it on Teachable into courses. And then that is an additional revenue stream for me.
Is it what kind of lift is it to do that repurposing?
Not heavy at all, because I'm literally just uploading the video recording to Teachable. And what I decided to make it into like an actual course is to add additional context with some type of like digital download or resource. So, for example, in my Art of LinkedIn Influencing course, I have basically like a guide for 30 days of posting on LinkedIn, where it gives them like references and examples and what type of content to create.
You were just talking about Creator Tea Talk, and I love that you brought it up, because I know that this past month you were doing a series on like mental health and sustainability. Yeah. I am curious to hear more about the things that you've learned from these sessions, things that other creators have brought in that you've been either surprised or excited to learn about that you would be willing to share here.
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing I've learned is that we have so much longer to go in this creator economy space. I think it's interesting because it's not necessarily new, but it's still very Wild Wild West. And I think the more I talk to creators, the more I talk to professionals on their creator economy side, whether they're working as, brand influencer marketing managers or talent managers, we're still all learning from each other. So everyone has a very different approach to how they do things. And I think the more I talk to creators, the more I notice there are still these pain points that haven't necessarily been solved, even though we talk about it a lot as creators. So one of the biggest things is that, you know, creators are still complaining about not getting paid on time, which I think is something that impacts people across the creator economy, but also freelancers as well. Anyone who's essentially an independent contractor. And for some odd reason, the brands with their billions of dollars have not figured out how to master paying their creators on time so that we can have a sustainable business. Because, you know, if let's say a brand pays me like $5,000 to post something, I get my post out, I send all my deliverables on time, and I have to wait 90 days to get paid. Where they do that at?
I saw someone joking the other day that next time that happens, next time a brand that they sign a deal with a brand, they're going to say, great, so once you've signed it, we have a net 60 until we can start the process of starting the work.
Yes.
You made a good post the other day on LinkedIn mm-hmm. about your approach to brand partnerships. And you said mm-hmm. there's three parts. Let your content yeah. do the talking, treat mm-hmm. your partnerships like relationships, and your content is currency. Price it accordingly. Yes. So mm-hmm. say more.
Yes. So I always feel like when I talk to creators, it's always this like intense feeling of like, I have to have the best content, or I have to have all these systems in place before I work with brands. And I think what I want creators to remember is that the power is being exactly who you are. And brands love who you are, which is why they want to approach you. So when I say let your content do the talking, I think it really means like spend a little bit more time investing in creating the content that you love and the things that you enjoy talking about before you rush into brand partnerships. Because you'll actually find that working with brand partners are a little bit more limiting, because now you're like kind of operating on their agenda now. So I feel like, you know, as a content creator, it's really important for me to just like stay true to who I am in terms of like voice, tone, the inspiration that I get to create content, because I don't ever want to feel pressured or feel like I have to say certain things in a way to like appease an algorithm or my quote unquote followers. Jade's going to do what she wants to do always.
I love that, Jade. And it's actually like a question that I had for you. I want to talk about authenticity. I wrote an essay about this recently, kind of like about the performance of authenticity and what's expected. It's a huge buzzword, similar to community. Everyone's using it in creator spaces right now. It's what everybody like wants to have, wants to be. And it's like our strongest form of digital currency. Brands are always wanting to work with creators who come across as authentic. And so depending on who the creator is and what the space is, that could look like many different ways. And I'm wondering for you, I'm curious to your thoughts in general on what authenticity even means.
Yeah, I think for me, in its simple form, it's just like who you see online is exactly what you're going to get in person. And I think that's something I've been very intentional about as I've been building my social media presence over these past couple of years. I never wanted there to be a situation where someone was like, oh, I follow Jade. I think she's so cool. And then they meet me in person. And they're like, she is dramatically different. Like, that is very alarming to me. So I'm not putting on a facade. If anything, I think social media makes me feel even more comfortable to show who I am and show like my most odd sides of who I am. And I think especially on a platform like LinkedIn that has been historically very professional, one thing I've made it my mission to do, especially for my community, is to help everyone understand, like, you can define what professionalism is. In my opinion, like, these rules around professionalism were designed by these white men who are obviously not me. I'm a Black girl with purple hair. I literally, for a period of time, had a marijuana nose ring. And I'm like, y'all, none of this is actually stopping me from doing my job on a day-to-day basis and working with clients. And I think we need to really pivot how we think about, you know, what it means to show up in professional environments or be a professional. So on LinkedIn in particular, I think that's why I've really attracted a lot of people to my page, because they're like, wow, this is really refreshing. You just say whatever you want to say. And granted, I recognize the privilege of me being someone who, you know, doesn't have an employer. So I think that does, you know, scare people sometimes. But I'm really in this mindset that if I'm going to use my LinkedIn as a way to get partnerships and potential clients or job opportunities, you need to know who you're working with. And I do that by showing up exactly as who I am.
That is amazing. And I love to hear it. I'm also, like you mentioning, like working with brands and things like that, I'm curious about your vetting process for who you partner with, especially with like you being so focused on showing up on who you are. And like, you have such a distinctive voice on the platform. I gotta say, like, I recognize a Jade post as soon as I see it, even before I see your name. So I'm curious what that process looks like for you.
Yeah. So for me, I always ask myself like one of three questions. It's one, is this something that I actually want to do? And then two, is this something that my audience will gain value from? Or is this information that they really need to know? And then three, is the brand and their values aligned with my personal values? So do they really believe in working with creators? Do they actually believe in social media? Because you'd be shocked. Brands are still debating like what the ROI of social media is. And if that's where you are, we don't need to work together. So I think for me, it really comes down to values and then also the value that it may have, the relationship may have to my audience and then me as well, of course.
Let's be real. AI is everywhere and it's cranking out content nonstop. Most of it is forgettable. And at best, it's kind of weird. But the best creators are doing something different. They're building brands AI can't replace by focusing on their community, their content, and their unique voice. The best creators are also going to the Creator Summit, a free 3-day online event from June 24th through 26th. You'll hear from industry leaders who are growing newsletters, communities, and media businesses that actually last. So if you're tired of chasing trends and ready to build something that matters, this is the event for you. You can get your free ticket to the Creator Summit at live.mightynetworks.com. Like, so as I understand it, your presence on social has kind of evolved. You were alluding to this a little bit earlier, from Instagram to Twitter and now to LinkedIn. I'm curious if your goals or priorities have shifted as you've kind of shifted across platforms, or if it's just been the same, like showing up as you and expressing like the kind of personal professional version of you that we've been talking about. But yeah, if there's been kind of a change and a development as you've shifted from platform to platform.
I would say it's more so that now I'm really leaning into the fact that I'm building a personal brand. I think I always kind of have. I think this is an example that I use all the time. I remember probably when I was 18 years old, that's when I started my first business, which was like a small baking business. And I remember Googling Jade Powell, and there was a girl in the UK that topped first. And once I had that in my mind, I was like, I'm going to find every possible way to make it that when someone Googles Jade Powell, I'm the first one.
You're going
to
put her on the 10th page of results.
Yes. I'm happy to say that I've succeeded. But I think the fact that I was thinking about that when I was 18 and I'm 32 now shows that like there was always something in my brain that was signaling to me that a personal brand, some form of entrepreneurship meshed together was always going to be built. I think now, especially that I'm no longer employed traditionally, it's allowed me more leeway to focus in on that. Because there were times when I was working for my employers, they'd be like, Jade, you can't say that. And I'm like, stop trying to control me. That's like always who I've been. I'm like, you can't tell me what to do. So I think over time, I've just really leaned all the way into building more of a brand and making sure that the Jade I. Powell name is a household name. In a good way.
I can relate to the story so much because I used to Google my name and there were so many other Natalia Perez's and I'm like, I have to be unique. Like, how do yes. I be that girl? So I just like at the time just like added my mother's last name. And so like just going by both last names now. And then that's how I'm like, all right, I'm the now yes. the first person that comes up on Google.
Yes. I mean, there is only one Beyonce. And if there right. are, they're not relevant.
Exactly. Period. Period. But on that note, really curious about the evolution of your business from when you started working alone. Like, you were talking about working for brands and that was not cutting it for you. And even now, I feel like, you know, building a sustainable business, something that you talk about a lot on LinkedIn. I'm curious about what boundaries and like what boundaries you have in place to sustain your business currently and mm-hmm. avoiding burnout.
Yeah. I mean, I think through therapy and just like getting older and wiser, I've been able to really learn how to recognize the signs of burnout. That's not something historically I've been great at. I think I would like wait until I was damn near dead to be like, oh, I should probably take a break, which is really insane. So I think now I've gotten a lot more comfortable empowering myself to take breaks and be like, actually, Jay, you don't need to work on this right now, or you can always reschedule. And I've gotten so comfortable with that, that there's no fear around it, which I think is a really great thing. But for me, growing a sustainable business is all about ensuring that in any stage of my life, I feel still very comfortable doing the work that I'm doing. If at any point I feel like I'm dreading work, or I feel like I don't want to do this or I don't like it, that's a signal to me that I need to take a break or I need to take a pause or reposition what I'm doing. That's something I assess on a monthly basis. I'm very intuitive with my body. I pay attention to what my body needs. If I'm feeling sick or if I'm feeling exhausted, I definitely honor that. But also, I think it's also looking at the work. So one of the things coming out of my like more 9-to-5 corporate era of my career was that I didn't want to be a social media manager anymore. I was like, I'm tired of being the one that's just like publishing content. There's so much more that I can be doing. There's so much more that I know how to do. This role no longer works for me. So I literally was just like, I will never do social media management again. And I haven't since. And that was thank you. That was a very intentional choice that I made. And I knew there would be a little bit of a sacrifice because I knew, especially with the way the industry has evolved, like most brands need social media managers, not strategists, not creative directors. So I know that hypothetically, if I was still offering social media management as a service, I could be making substantially more money, but I don't want to. So I'm not going to do it. So for me, it's about focusing on the work that I actually do want to do and the work that I enjoy, which is strategy work, creative direction, building sustainable social media teams for brands and agencies. So that's how I feel like the work has shifted over time. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about managing your own social media again, yeah. though. So you mentioned earlier this guide for 30 days of posting you do. Mm-hmm. You've also mentioned, I think, in a LinkedIn post earlier this year that you want to hit 100,000 followers on the platform by the end of this year. You're right now at 27,500 or so as we record. You were saying that I think early 2023 when you got that Sprout Social one, you were at 10,000. Mm-hmm. So the growth that's going to be required to get you to 100,000 is going to be a lot. You're going to have to, I don't know what it's going to be, what the, you know, what the point that will drive you there, what the strategy that will drive you there will be. But yeah, that's my question, is how are you going to get 100,000 LinkedIn followers by the end of 2025 from 27,500?
So the gag is, I've already changed my mind. I think that is a big part of my learning journey. I think at the time that was my goal, which was last year, I had to have a little bit of a reality check moment and be like, Jade, is that what you really want? And I think that goes back to the checking in with myself, because I think if I really wanted to put in the effort, I can easily make that happen. But I think going into this year, especially with like such a busy H1, like first half of the year, I really realized, okay, I actually do want to scale back and not do as much as I was doing earlier in this year and late last year, because I think I was riding off of the high of just feeling like, this is working for me, like I can move through this. And then this year has been all about sustainability for me. So I'm like, girl, you'll get the followers you get.
Well, I think and you'll too, be okay like, with it. Audience growth, I think people mistake this often. Audience growth is always downstream of something else. It should only ever be a means to an end. So like just having the goal of like, we're going to get this many followers, subscribers, whatever it is. It's like, okay, well, why? Like that number has to be attached to like a specific why, that it needs to be this amount, because it's usually downstream of money, right?
Yes.
And like work-life balance.
Agree, 100%. And it's so funny because even thinking about why that was a goal for me at the time, I think it's like, it's so easy to get caught up in like the social media vanity of it all. Mm-hmm. Just like, I want to grow my phone, because that's what gets tended to be like prized in this industry. People love to see that you have so many followers, and that's the first thing that is like an indicator of like success on social media. Mm-hmm. But then I really had to like lock in and be like, Jade, you wouldn't even recommend this to your client. So why are you trying to do it?
It's like the American Psycho business card type of thing.
Yes, exactly.
I did want to bring up one other goal that I imagine you've kind of doubled back on a little bit. I read this interview you did with Buffer 2 years ago, and they asked for your goals for that year, which was 2023. And one of your goals, I'll read what you said. My first goal is to create further delineation among all the different brands I have, because they all serve different audiences. Mm-hmm. And we've been kind of touching on this a little bit, how you've kind of, you know, merged things, you know, some 2.5 years later. How do you feel about that?
I actually feel like I've succeeded in this, which makes me happy, because that was something that was really stressing me out at the time. I didn't think that people would get what I was trying to do. And I think between the M-Co, which is my creative agency, Creator T-Talk, my personal brand, while they're all interconnected in this like Jade cinematic universe, they are all different properties. And I think the more I've been able to talk about each of them in different ways, people are getting to further understand what they're focused on. So the M-Co is my agency where I do social media professional work. And the Creator Tea Talk is a side of my business that serves creators and is intended to educate and inform creators. And then my personal brand is me, exactly what you're seeing. And then the role that I'm building even between these two brands. So I think I've succeeded there, hopefully.
No, it really sounds like you have. You mentioned the M-Dash agency, and we'd love to hear more. Like, is it just you? How many people work with you? Are there any contract workers? Like, who keeps the, like, how does the agency keep running?
Yeah. So it's all me. It's one woman led, which is something I love to lead with. But yeah, it's me. I think when I started my agency, it was literally to have agency over my own life. And when I tell people that, it's because I know the way that I see my life kind of evolving over time. I always want to be doing creative work that feels right to me. So that means that over time, it's going to change. Even more recently, I decided I'm going to start, you know, making that transition from freelance to fractional, which doesn't sound like a big jump, but it is in my mind. I tell people I'm giving myself a promotion, essentially, because as an entrepreneur, we don't always get to do that, but I am giving myself a promotion. So effectively, what I'll be doing, instead of like working with agencies and brands in a freelance kind of, you know, time to time capacity, I'll be doing longer term contractors in a more leadership role, where my work is less executional, but focused on leadership and building the teams that they need to get the job done in social media marketing. But yeah, I think it's something that is really my baby. And when I built it, I really just did it because I wanted to focus on the creative work that I wanted to do. Like I was saying earlier, I didn't want to be a social media manager anymore. I was just like, there's something going on in my brain where like I know how to help brands accomplish what they're trying to accomplish on social in different capacities. So that's the work that I need to be doing. So I'm helping agencies, you know, win new social media work with pitch work and building out RFP responses for their potential new clients. I'm doing copywriting. I'm doing creative direction. One of my favorite gigs, I was brought on as a fractional VP of social creative or creative director for Pfizer. And it was like so random. I'm like, why am I creating TikToks for Pfizer? But here we are creating TikTok concepts. I'm like building a storyboard for a 30-second ad on TikTok. Like who would have thunk?
Are you okay? So in that course, or in that post, that LinkedIn post I mentioned earlier about your $50,000 Q1 earnings, you also say that you're on track to hit 200K, obviously, mm-hmm. with that this yeah. year, but that your goal is 250,000. And I wanted yes. to ask how you plan to make up that gap. But it sounds like this is part of that plan. It's shifting Correct. From the freelance to fractional approach. That mm-hmm. obviously kind of comes with a price raise.
Yes.
Yeah. How do you plan to make up that gap to get the extra $50,000 this year?
Yes. So it will be my fractional work. I'm hoping before end of year, I'll sign at least two clients that are each bringing me in about $20,000 for the 6 months that I plan to work with each of them. So 6 months will be my beginning contract rate. And then I'm hoping with the right agency partners, I'll want to work with each of them that long. We'll see. But I think once I find the right clients that I'm looking for and who needs this type of work, I'll be able to pull in that extra 50.
What about, okay, so there's the four revenue streams, right? Brand partnerships, mm-hmm. freelance social media work, which is what we're talking about, speaking mm-hmm. engagements, webinars, and courses. So do you think it'll all come from the freelance social work or fractional social work, let's say? Or
yeah.
do you think some of it will come from the brand partnerships, mm-hmm. which obviously if you're not focusing on follower growth, that's one factor that helps raise prices, et cetera.
Yeah.
But yeah, question is, besides the fractional work, do you think that extra 10,000 plus will come from any mm-hmm. of these other revenue streams?
I think I wouldn't be surprised if it came from brand partnerships, because what I learned from Q1 was that more of my income came from brand partnerships. But I think with me kind of shifting my focus or spending a little bit more time focusing on my fractional work, I think the fractional work will pull that in, but we'll see. Because I always go in with these plans and I'm like, oh, surprise, surprise, that didn't happen the way I thought it was going to. So right now I'm thinking it will be fractional. I definitely know it won't be courses and webinars because I'm actually going to be scaling back on those so that I can do a relaunch next year. And then my speaking engagements, I do have a couple more planned, but I'm going to take a little bit of a beat on those. So it's either going to be the fractional or the brand partnerships for sure.
Which revenue stream out of the ones we just talked about has been like the most surprisingly successful to you? And mm-hmm. which one has been like the most difficult to scale, the most difficult one to crack?
It has definitely been the brand partnerships. Brand partnerships, I think, because my intention wasn't necessarily to be a creator. I just kind of became one and I was like, oh, cool, this works. So I stuck with it and I enjoyed it. So I've been sticking with it. But to me, I've always been a marketer first. I enjoy being a creator or influencer. And I think it's fun work and it's something I still want to keep doing. But I am a marketer at the end of the day. That's my trade. It's what I love to do. It's when I want to go out of this earth being. And I think as long as I'm doing that, I will always love being like fractional, working in some. Eventually, I think the end goal is to have some role where I'm a CMO at least once. I want to try it. It's not my priority, but I do think there will be an eventual shift in the industry where CMOs are more social focused. And that sounds right at my alley. So give it a couple of years. I'll get there. But I think the fractional work. And then I think with my freelance work, because I haven't gone quite fractional yet, that has been the most surprising, but it's also kind of just the nature of the work because it's not as consistent. So it has been frustrating there. There has been times where I've just like have not been able to bring in freelance work. You know, sometimes I'll talk to agency and they'll be like, yeah, I'd love to hire you right now. We just need to prep a scope of work. And then like a week later, I will never hear back. And that happens often because I think it's hard for agencies and brands to like kind of figure out how to bring in freelancers and when, and decide like, should we hire an FTE instead? How long should they be around? There's like a lot of decisions they have to make on their end, and that impacts like whether I get hired or not.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to something we were talking about just a second ago, which is that you don't necessarily identify as a creator. This is something I love to ask everybody who comes on is what does that term mean to you? What does creator mean to you in the sense, not in like the broadest sense, but in the sense that we talk about on this show?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely identify as a creator, but not creator first. I think for me, being a creator is literally anyone that creates something. And I think when I say that, I think oftentimes in this industry, people think creators are always like, you know, TikTok creators. It's like I go on TikTok and I post my videos, but I always say that creation looks very differently. It could be I'm creating a podcast, I'm creating a blog, I'm creating a newsletter, I'm creating experiences, I'm creating community, I'm creating brands. So I think, you know, creator is really just kind of like the new term for entrepreneur, because I also think creating is also including businesses. So I think it's like the kind of new Gen Z millennial wave sexy term for entrepreneur. But I like the combination of creatorpreneur, which is what I prefer to call myself.
Yes, I fully agree with you. I wrote a whole piece a couple months ago that was just creators are entrepreneurs and kind of mapping this. But I'll share my two definitions I always like to share. One is more broad and kind of what you were saying, where I think a creator is anybody who is contributing to the corpus of the internet. So I really put it in this digital sense. And then the other more specific one, which maps more to the creators or entrepreneurs thing, and I think you would identify with, is anybody who is creating media for distribution online, who is creating digital media, and is in earnest trying to grow an audience beyond their immediate friends and family, and is finally somehow monetizing it all. So it's people trying to make a living using digital media as sort of the tip of the spear.
And one thing I'll add to that is I'm in the mindset that you actually don't need to monetize yet. I mean, honestly, that's the goal for many of us, but I'm in the mindset, especially as someone who believes that like creators can be building in-person and real-life community. Not everyone wants to monetize on that, and I don't think that makes you less of a creator.
Well, I think too, I'm really into like that the monetization doesn't have to be like direct ads, but like it could be as abstract as like I'm building a presence to then like leverage getting a full-time job because these people like see my content and they like it so much. And so that is monetization too, where you're using digital media. It's just kind of more mediated, but that's monetization too.
Agree with that. Absolutely.
Tell us more about defining yourself as a creatorpreneur, what that term means to you. And I'd love to hear you speak a little bit more about this idea that creator is just the kind of new generation term for entrepreneur.
Yeah, I think when earlier on and like when I was building my personal brand and my business, I had a really hard time describing what I did because I'm someone that's very multifaceted. I am a social media professional. I am a designer. I like to paint. I like to do all types of creative work. And every time someone would be like, Jade, what do you do? I'd like stumble. I'd be like, it depends on what context. I don't know. And I would always like struggle with that. And then I remember I was talking to my brand manager and I was like, how do you think I should just like describe like all the work that I do that's really all encompassing where someone would, if I said it, they would like really understand. And she said, call yourself a creatorpreneur. And I was like, girl, you spit in because that makes so much sense. Because I think it speaks to the fact that I am a creator, but the preneur part obviously leads to the fact that I'm also an entrepreneur. So everything that I'm building is as a business owner, but also through the lens of someone who is very creative. I've also heard people kind of reframe it as creative entrepreneur or creativepreneur. I think it's pretty similar because I think the ethos is that I'm building a business, but it's through a creative lens and all the work that I do is creative.
One last angle I want to put on this. So you know how all squares are rectangles, but not all rectangles are square, right? We all learned this in like third grade or whatever. In that same way, are all creators marketers, but not all marketers are creators?
That's a great question. I think all creators are marketers, but I think all marketers are not creators. And I say that because I do think with creation, whether you identify as an entrepreneur or not, there is a level of requirement from the job that requires you to put yourself out there. And that is marketing at its core. Even if it's just like word of mouth, traditional you still have to talk about your business so that you build awareness, and that is a part of marketing. However, I think there are marketers that don't do any type of creative or content related work. And because of that, I wouldn't consider them creators as well. And I also think there's also this kind of like, you know, viewpoint of, if you're a creator, do you have to have an audience? And that's something I think about often, because I don't think most marketers are going in with the intention of having a personal audience, maybe an audience on their, you know, their end work or their final product, but maybe not necessarily like an audience for their personal brand.
Which becomes kind of a luxury now, in the way we were talking about earlier, about how like you've built this presence on LinkedIn. I do it too, how I've built this presence on LinkedIn, because I know it's an asset that will help me in my career and help me grow and survive.
Yeah.
It's like a luxury to not be building your own audience as well at this point.
Yes.
Like, that means that you have the experience or like such a sharp ability where you don't need that to make a living.
Yeah. And I think that has been one of the things that has been most shocking to me in this journey, because like, honestly, I don't think anyone cares that I'm a marketing professional. Like, some people generally don't know. I remember speaking to someone recently. They were like, girl, I thought you were an influencer this whole time. And I was like, I've been working in marketing for 12 years. It was just so funny to me, because I was like, what? And like, I have gotten opportunities without anyone looking at my resume or my portfolio. Like, they literally do not care. They're like, we see what you do on LinkedIn and that's enough, which has been so shocking to me, because I'm like, if this was me several years ago, I would have had to go through like a strenuous interview process and show all the work that I've done. But for some brands, they're like, you're LinkedIn, I've seen your partnerships, that's cool. Let's bring you in. And I'm like, okay, great. I'm not complaining.
Let's be real. AI is everywhere and it's cranking out content nonstop. Most of it is forgettable, and at best, it's kind of weird. But the best creators are doing something different. They're building brands AI can't replace by focusing on their community, their content, and their unique voice. The best creators are also going to the Creator Summit, a free 3-day online event from June 24th through 26th. You'll hear from industry leaders who are growing newsletters, communities, and media businesses that actually last. So if you're tired of chasing trends and ready to build something that matters, this is the event for you. You can get your free ticket to the Creator Summit at live.mightynetworks.com.
Yeah, no, that's amazing that your work, as you were saying earlier, kind of just like speaks for itself at this point. And you mentioned, circling back to something you said before about self-promotion, obviously it doesn't come easily to a lot of people. Even a lot of creators, I think, struggle to self-promote. But you're very good at it. As we've mentioned, like, your LinkedIn voice really is so distinctive. And I feel like you're recognized as like someone in this cohort of LinkedIn creators who is like leading the charge for more like a more authentic voice, a more like, this is who Jade is. And so I'm wondering like how you have built this self-promotion muscle over time and how it has evolved.
Yeah. I mean, I really feel like that comes from years of working in corporate, where you literally cannot get what you want unless you're like, hello, everyone, here's a report on what I did today. And I think that's just a skill that I learned. I think, you know, I was kind of one of the first ones in my family to go into traditional corporate. So I definitely was not prepared for what you had to do to survive corporate, because I literally thought like going to work and doing my job would be enough. And then I learned the hard way that is not how you get raises and promotions. You have to be loud about your wins. I think it's just a great practice in general, but you have to be able to feel super comfortable talking about all of your accomplishments in order to stay visible, to stay relevant. And we think that doesn't apply with the work, in a traditional like 9-to-5, but it does. You often will not be able to get, you know, to the next step in your career or be able to get the opportunities you want unless you're saying, this is what I've done so far. So I think corporate kind of taught me that, to be very loud and proud about my wins and also my losses, because that's something I like to show as well, because I never want to paint a picture that, you know, things are all always peachy keen, because they're not. But I think I've gotten quite comfortable talking about my wins because of that. So I'm always talking about me, and it's not something that's going to stop until I retire.
I mean, that's all a part of it. That's all a part of it. And I mean, speaking of wins and also like being in corporate and being in an environment where people are kind of just like monitoring what you say and how you express yourself. And like, mm-hmm. you have this refreshing transparency about also like showing, like showcasing losses. Mm-hmm. And so I want to talk about your A Bitch Be Contenting journal series.
Thank you. Yeah, that is my favorite series.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of our favorites too. And there's one that you posted, I'm forgetting when, but it was about like a brand ghosting you. And the way that you set these up is so creative, because it's like they're posted vertically on LinkedIn, but there's like, mm-hmm. obviously like you're recording it vertically on your phone, but it's like recording, you're on your photo booth app, which is great because photo booth photo shoots are like back in. So would love to hear about how that came about and how that's become a portal for you to also share more like of your wins, losses, and all of the Jade lore.
Yeah. I mean, I really wanted to just like start a storytelling series, because oftentimes I'm always asked by people like, you know, things always look like they're going so great. Like, how are there, were there any moments where like you felt like you didn't know what you were doing, or like, are you not insecure? Or are you not scared? And I'm like, am I painting a picture that like, I'm not scared, because I'm honestly always terrified. I just think I've learned how to move through the terror. So I think when I started that series, I just wanted to share like the lessons I've been learning as a creatorpreneur. Cause like, I just don't know many people that are also doing this, and especially didn't grow up with people who are doing what I do. So I'm literally figuring out things as I go. There's definitely no like, you know, perfect lens on how to approach being a creatorpreneur. So I just really wanted to be, you know, as informed as possible, and then also just share the experiences along the way. So with A Bitch Be Contenting, and especially that episode where I talked about being ghosted, I wanted to share that experience, because I think people were seeing me get these brand deals and they're like, Jade is like this amazing creator, all the brands love her. And I'm like, actually, no, one ghosted me, Pookie, and it wasn't fun. Like, I actually hated it. So I really wanted to share that experience, because I know that it's something that happens to other creators. And I think for people who are early in their content creation journey, especially very new to like working with brand partners, I wanted to show them like, this is something that happens. And I tell people that, like, you know, working with brand partners, it's like dating. It's like being in a relationship, and ghosting is something that happens when you're dating. So brands do it too.
That I wanted real quick, the format of that series is so clever. Like, until I was saying, like the way it's the vertically filmed, it's filming your laptop. So it's like, mm-hmm. you are only, you're kind of small within the screen, but it's much more engaging than just a front facing like iPhone video, right?
Yes.
Did you come up with that somewhere? Is that like something you adapted from somewhere else? Because I think it's a great way to stand out on the platform.
Yeah, that was just something that kind of came out of me using my photo booth as like a mirror. I use it when I put on my makeup often, because I'm like, I have mirrors in my home, but I always use, I'm just so attached to my laptop. I love her.
Well, because you're going to be, you know, on camera anyway, so you might as well see how it looks on camera.
Exactly. So I'm just like putting on my makeup, and then I remember I was like, what if I just like film this through my laptop and just prop my phone up? So I usually put my phone on my tripod, put it behind kind of like next to me, and then put the focus on my laptop. And then once I did it, people were like, this is brilliant. And I was like, oh, thank you. You guys see the vision.
our producer, Tom, he'll put like a clip of one of them here. One thing I wanted to ask was how much you work in the average work week. We've been talking a lot about making sure this is sustainable for you and like all the different things you do. How many mm-hmm. hours do you think you work each week, and how does that break down?
I would say I don't think I work more than 30 hours a week. I've been very hard on the no 40, because I am not full time for a reason. So my full time is less than 30 hours a week. It definitely changes over time, especially if I have like agency clients who need me to be on standby a little bit more. So I think, you know, I try to look at it as like across all of my projects, whether it be brand partnerships, my webinars, courses that I'm building, speaking engagements, agency work, about how many hours do I have to spend a month? And I don't think I work more than 80 hours a month, to be honest. which I love that for me.
That is amazing. Okay, so you said no 40. You've also said that you plan to retire by 40. So this no 40 thing, a big theme. You're 32 right now. Yes. How do you plan to make that happen, to retire by 40?
Yeah, so I think, again, scaling for me is doing it in a sustainable way. So I think I'll always do what works. Right now, having this like split across different income streams makes sense. And I'll continue doing it for as long as I can until one day I'm like, okay, I may need to pivot, and I'll do that. But I think for me, when I look at my life at 40, I just have been in social media for so long and have been on social media for so long that I'm like, I would eventually like to get off, because while I love this work, I don't think that, you know, long term, it's the most sustainable for my mental health. And that's what I prioritize most in my life. But I think to get there, it's really just about making sure that I'm in a position financially that I can take care of myself and my business without burning out. So I think my goals for the next couple of years is to be completely debt free. I have a couple of credit cards I need to pay off. Amex, if you want to do a partnership, let's talk. I want to pay off my mortgage completely. I want to pay off my student loans. And I think once I'm debt free, which I think I can accomplish in the next couple of years, it's then about deciding what is a reasonable salary for me that doesn't require me to overwork myself. I always tell people, like, my goal isn't to be a millionaire. Am I going to stop myself from making millions? No, but that's not my goal. And I think, like, and at least for right now, I think like a comfortable living would look like between 250 and 500K a year max.
Yeah, that would be really comfortable.
Yeah, very.
I mean, I hope Amex is listening so that your dreams can come true.
Let's partner, Amex. We love American Express over here.
Oh my gosh. Yes. But you mentioned before about like stepping into fractional work, you know, becoming a CMO. Curious about what like retirement looks like for you. How do you envision the rest of your career trajectory? You know, you're talking about becoming debt free. You're talking about like these money goals. How do you see yourself transitioning into the next phase in retirement?
Yeah. So it's a couple of things. I think like work-wise, it's not that I'm going to stop working. I don't think I'm someone that will ever really stop working. Like that's the part of me where I'm like, oh, the weight of capitalism, it's always going to get to me. But I think it's more so about like the type of work. So it's less me focusing on execution and more like my work is more so like community building, investing into other creative businesses, investing into art, whatever those things are that I'm interested in. And also still building brands and businesses. I think that's just who I will always be as an entrepreneur. But I think it would be ideally at that point where it's like, I don't necessarily have to do everything for profit or like, you know, this need to just like bring in millions of dollars in revenue every year. Like, I think it's more so going to be about building businesses that aren't necessarily designed to bring in income, but more so give back to community. And then the other part is like, I genuinely have a dream of just kind of returning to where my parents are from, which is Jamaica, and just living as a gardener. Like, I want to do that so bad. I just want to have my own space in Jamaica and just like garden and grow my mangoes and live my life. So I think that will be like the whatever that medium ground is between living in Jamaica, being a garden and growing a garden, and then also just kind of like doing nonprofit work. That would be nice.
Being a garden too, you know.
Yes, being a garden. Absolutely.
Really quick, community. I have noticed like you're really good at engaging with other people who are like part content creator, part marketer, or whatever, but part content creator, especially in the B2B space. LinkedIn posts I've seen where you're tagging like other people we've interviewed or, you know, just a bunch of people in the space. Tell us about the role that this kind of like creator community plays in your work and the way you approach this work.
Yeah, it's such a big part of the work and I'm so grateful for it. Like, I think having other people around you that do what you do, like, can do wonders for your mental health, because it's a constant reminder that you're not in this work alone, even though it can feel that way oftentimes. And I think what I'm most grateful for is the transparency that this community has given me. It's so easy for me to text, you know, someone, another creator I know, and I'm like, hey, how much is this brand paying you? And they'll be very transparent and tell me, which I'm so grateful for, because I think there is so much work to do in terms of in the creator economy, in terms of equity and making sure Black creators especially are being paid fairly and in the same amount. So having that transparency from other creators and especially creators who aren't Black is very important to me. So I love that visibility. But also it's just nice to talk about like the woes and also get a new frame of thinking around just like how I could be growing my business and what possibilities could look like. I think one of the most things that I was recently grateful for was that one of my brand partners, Teachable, they invited me to be a part of this collective of like creators who are using their platform, of course, but like all of us were from very different industries. Like I met this guy who is working in like aviation and someone else is doing like software engineering. So they're all teaching their communities how to do these different things. And they were just talking about like how they were growing their businesses, how they were scaling, the marketing tools that they use. And it was just such a great thing for me to witness because while I know a lot, I don't know everything. So I think just having a different perspective on how people are building in the same industry, well, the same creator economy was very helpful for me. So I love it in that sense. I feel like I'm constantly learning and able to evolve my business in the way that I need to because of it.
That's amazing. I am curious, you being a part of all of these communities, very diverse backgrounds, what is a piece of advice that has radically shifted the way you approach your business? And I'm also curious about a piece of actionable advice that you'd leave our audience too.
Yeah. So this is a piece of advice that I got from my friend and fellow creator, Gabby Beckford. We love her. Gabby gave me permission, I think I want to say earlier this year when I saw her, and she was like, Jade, you need to crash out. And she was so right.
That's so real.
And it sounds so silly in theory, but I think because creative work is so personal and, you know, we're taught to, you know, you just be professional. It's going to be okay. And we're taught to just like hold things and not hold like brands accountable. And I think Gabby really gave me this permission to crash out and remind me that anything that I ask for can and should be done. And if the brand doesn't want to do it, then they are not the right partner for me. Point blank, period. And I think as creators, because we're often the ones that aren't in the position of power, like we're looking to the brands to really like sign off on these like ideas that we have. And it's a very vulnerable process. And not every brand is going to be like excited to work with you, which is like a part of the work. I've always understood that. But I think, you know, because the industry is evolving so much, there's also a lot of nuance to like how to approach creators. And some brands genuinely do not know how to. So whether it's intentionally or not, they will play in your face. And that advice has reminded me, like, don't let these brands play in your face. So the crashing out, love that advice. I encourage more women especially to do it. Crash the fuck out. And then also, I think the advice that I give other creators is just post the content. I think a lot of creators, they get very much in their own way because they're like, I have to have this like 8-part video series planned and it has to be perfect. And I have to make sure all my graphics have the same text and font. No one cares. But what they do care about is what you have to say. So just start. And then once you start, you can evolve over time. Like literally nothing has to be perfect at first. Like you can always change. A lot of things that I've implemented several years ago, I was like, wow, I look back and I'm like, that was really ugly, Jade. But it got the job done. And it's okay. So just start. You don't have to wait until it's perfect.
I agree. Just do it is the best piece of advice. I think we'll wrap it up here, Jade. Thank you for coming on. Is there anything you'd like to plug?
Thank you for having me. I would just encourage people to follow me on LinkedIn, or as I like to call it, the Briefcase app. You can follow me at Jade I. Powell, and then also subscribe to my newsletter at creatortalk.com.
Perfect. There we go. This was a great episode. Listeners, we will see you next week.